Well, you know, I'm a real fan of Jewish folk tales. I love to read them, and there's one that is told about the time in the early 1800s when France, under Napoleon, was seeking to expand its territory, and Napoleon decided that he would attack Russia, right? Yeah, you know how that works. And so they had this disastrous invasion of Russia, and then the French army, led by Napoleon, because in those days the emperor was right out front leading the troops, so they had to retreat. And somehow Napoleon got separated from his own soldiers, and he was running, fleeing from the Russians that were in pursuit, and he ended up in this one particular village, and as he was going through the village, he saw the Russian soldiers coming from the side, and so he quickly ducked in the door at this home, and it turned out to be the home of a Jewish tailor, you know, did sewing and whatnot. And he said, "Quick, hide me." And so the tailor wasn't aware that this was Napoleon, but in his culture, which was oftentimes oppressed, as you know, the czars were not real kind to the Jewish people and so on. So here comes up someone in need. And so he said, "Okay, quick, get on my bed and dive underneath the feather comforter that's there, you know, fluffy comforter." And then he threw on a couple of more of those and blankets on top and created this big kind of pile on top of them. And so Napoleon was hiding under that. And a short time later, sure enough, the Russian soldiers burst in the front door and says, is there anybody that came in here wanting to hide?" And this tailor, being a Jewish guy, of course, answered a question with a question. And he said, "Ah, who would come in here to be hidden?" It's a great talent. If you ever want to not answer somebody, just ask another question. So anyway, so the soldiers searched around inside his home, and they saw this bed with a great pile of blankets, and they had bayonets on their rifles, and they went and they stabbed down into the bed in several places, and there weren't any sounds that came out. So they then looked around a little bit more and went out the door, and they were gone. They left the village. And so then the emperor then crawled out from underneath the covers. And he was very pleased, of course. And he then announced to this tailor that he was Napoleon. And he offered a reward to the tailor. He said, "You get three requests. Whatever they are, I will do my best to answer them." And so the Jewish man thought about it for a second. And he said, "Well, my roof has been leaking for 2 years. Maybe you could arrange to have someone come fix my roof." And so Napoleon said, "Done. It'll be done in a week." And then the tailor thought some more, and being a little bit braver, he said, "In our little village, there is another tailor down the street. And he takes some of my customers. Maybe you could arrange for him to go to some other location." And so Napoleon says, "We'll have him move to another village. It'll happen right away. No problem." He says, "What's your last request?" And the tailor, this was a man who lived a simple life, and this was all he needed. He had a roof over his house, going to be keeping him dry. His job would be secure. So he says, "All I really want to know now is to tell me what it felt like to be underneath those covers when those soldiers were stabbing their blade into the bed there." And Napoleon got enraged. And he says, "How dare you ask about my feelings? No one can disrespect me in that way. You are going to be shot for doing that very thing." And so he left the house. And a short time later, French soldiers burst into the house, and they took him in their hands, and they manacled him up with irons, and they drug him out, and they took him to a location outside the village there, and they told him that he was going to be shot the next day. So as you can imagine, the tailor didn't sleep any at all that night. He was worried about his fate. And the next morning, sure enough, the soldiers took him to a tree, tied him up to the tree, and then a number of them lined up with their rifles and took aim. And there was an officer there over on the side. And just about as he was now to give the order of his execution, a horse comes riding up with another officer on it and says, "Stop! Don't shoot!" And he announces that the emperor has pardoned him, and he said he also has a note that he wants me to deliver to you. And so he walked up to the tailor and he handed him the note. Of course, they untied him and they released him. And they all went their way. And after they had gone, he opened up the note and he read these words. He says, "Your request is granted. Now you know how I felt when I was underneath those covers." He wasn't so clever about the Russians, but he was pretty clever about teaching a lesson. But this story is all about this tailor bearing the burden of Emperor Napoleon, and that's what I'm going to talk about here tonight, bearing one another's burdens. And that, of course, is the theme of Galatians 6:2, a passage that many of you are very familiar with. And quite often you will hear people talk about the first half of that verse, but oftentimes they don't really deal a whole lot with the second half of Galatians 6:2. They either gloss over it or maybe omit it altogether. But Rav Shaul, a.k.a. the Apostle Paul, said that the reason that we are called to bear the burdens of other people is in order to fulfill the Torah of Messiah, or as English Bibles say, the law of Christ. Now, if you believe that the Torah has been forever relegated to a so-called age of law, lest you become a Judaizer and a legalist, then this phrase has little meaning to you. Since the law has been concluded in this way of thinking, the law of Christ then must be something entirely new. And I did some checking around, and I have a couple of quotes that I got here from one site that said, "This verse teaches us that Christians are simply to focus on loving God and loving others. And there is no need to remember the other 600 individual commandments in the Old Testament law." Now, I wholeheartedly agree with the principle, the concept of loving Adonai and loving my neighbor as myself. And that's the way that Yeshua summarized the Torah in Matthew 22:36-40. He said that the whole law and the prophets can be summarized in the simple commandments of loving Adonai, our God, with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our might, and our neighbor as ourself. And that's what it all hinges on. And we say that when we do the Shema. But Yeshua never said to ignore all of the other commandments. He never said that. In so doing, it's almost like throwing out the baby with the bathwater, because there are many principles within there that are just as meaningful today as when Adonai spoke them to Moses. So, for example, in Leviticus 25:17, which says, "We are not to wrong one another." All right, now how legalistic does that sound to you? Or does that sound like that it is a common sense, loving your neighbor as yourself principle for daily living? "You're not allowed to slander one another with our speech," according to Leviticus 19:16. Seems like that should be appropriate for today. "To harbor hatred in your heart towards someone," Leviticus 19:17. "To take revenge against someone," Leviticus 19:18. "To bear a grudge," also in Leviticus 19:18. All of these were included in those dreaded commandments that some believe now are concluded. And I could go on. I've just given you a handful here. There are literally dozens and dozens of commandments like that that are just simple common sense kinds of things for being a good neighbor. But if you believe that they have been now relegated to an age of law, that also requires that you ignore other parts of Scripture, like Yeshua's declaration in Matthew 5:17, where he said that, "I did not come to abolish the Torah, but to fulfill it." So there must be another way of looking at the relationship between the work of Messiah and the nature of the Torah, besides the extremes of complete abolition and legalistic bondage. There's something in between. And that is what Paul is calling, in Galatians, the Torah of Messiah, or what we also might call the Torah of Yeshua. Either way, it's the same thing. If you want to say law of Christ, that's fine. So Yeshua accomplished two things when it comes to the Torah. He taught specific, godly ways that we can live out aspects of the Torah that relate to loving God and your neighbors yourself. So that when the Torah says that you shall not commit murder in Exodus 20:13, Yeshua says in Matthew 5:21-24 that we should not abolish that commandment, but we should go even further with it, that we should take an even deeper application of that by saying that we should not murder the relationships that we have with one another through anger. When the law says to love your neighbor, Leviticus 19:18, that does not mean that we can hate our enemies, which was what they had done in that day, where they flipped it around, and logically they said, well, if you love your neighbors, that means you can hate your enemies. Yeshua says, no, you have to love your enemies as well, because they are our neighbors. And the whole parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10 is all about that. And when you do things found in the Torah, like giving alms and fasting and praying, which still have meaning for our lives that are described in the Torah, Yeshua calls us simply to do them without drawing attention to ourselves. So it's not like he abolished them or did away with them. And so then it goes in that way for every aspect of the Torah, because Yeshua taught they serve as practical ways of loving your neighbor as yourself, if you do them in a truly godly fashion and not in a legalistic, burdensome kind of way like the religious authorities used to do. And so he could do this because, as the scripture records in Matthew 7:29, he was teaching as one having authority. In biblical times, not all teachers were considered to have authority to interpret scripture. There was a class of rabbis called the Sofarim, translated usually in the New Testament as scribes, that were allowed to teach Torah, but they could not give a new interpretation to any of the principles. They always had to rely upon the interpretation of a rabbi who had simicha, as in the Hebrew, authority. And as I just said here in Matthew 7:29, it says that Yeshua had that authority, so he could give a new interpretation on the scriptures, and that is exactly what he was doing. But, as I said, there were two aspects of the Torah. Not just about an example and an interpretation of how to live out the godly, daily living kinds of aspects of the Torah. What do you do about the sacrificial aspects? Yeshua fulfills them as well. His death satisfied all of the sacrificial elements. And so he gave his life as a substitute for us as our atonement, thus paying the penalty for the sins that we commit. And it was necessary in order for justice to occur. There had to be a penalty paid for sin. And Yeshua says, I'll do that for you. It's all on me. And so any of the aspect of the Torah that deals with sacrifice is now fulfilled in him. So none of those things need be repeated again. Unlike loving your neighbor as yourself, that you have to continue to do all the time, so that's how you kind of separate those two aspects of Torah, all fulfilled in Yeshua. And so these then two aspects of Yeshua's relationship to the Torah are summed up in this underlying meaning of the Greek word pleru, translated as fulfill, which literally means to be filled to the top and overflowing. He's everything about the Torah. It's the thing that we're looking for. Is our example and our sacrificial accomplishment. Thus, in his letter to the Galatians, Paul could refer to the Torah of Messiah as the way of giving perfect and complete purpose to the Torah of Moses. So in every respect, Yeshua fulfilled the law. He did not abolish it. He did so by giving it its true meaning, free from the rigid religious obligations that had evolved around the Torah because of human tradition. Anytime human tradition gets involved in there, it's either going to go off in a direction of liberty, that whatever it is fine, or in the direction of legalistic bondage. And Yeshua is going another path, right down the middle of saying it is meaningful for your life, and so we're not going to forget about it. And so his way is the perfect way. So this passage in Galatians chapter 6 reflects this understanding. It enables us to see that there is a purpose specifically to bearing someone's burdens that goes beyond a mere random act of kindness. It gives meaning to a specific aspect of the Torah, a practical way of loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, after Adonai gave the Ten Commandments to Moses on Mount Sinai, Exodus chapter 20, he wasn't finished. He kept on talking. He kept on giving more commandments to Moses. It includes the portion from Exodus chapter 23. And I'm going to read two verses, Exodus 23, 4 and 5. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey wandering away, you shall surely return it to him. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying helpless under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving it to him. You shall surely release it with him. Now this is really, truly a remarkable commandment. It doesn't have to do with performing a compassionate act for someone that you like. It is for the benefit of your enemy or the one who hates you. Sound familiar? It's exactly what Yeshua was teaching. It was in the Torah. Remember, Yeshua taught that we are to consider our enemies as our neighbors and that we are to love them. So all he was doing was applying this principle of the Torah in a more general way in the Brit Hadashah. He wasn't making it complicated. He wasn't making it distorted like other teachers of the law have done. We love our neighbors, meaning the ones that we like and the ones that we hate, in the exact same way, with acts of kindness. Picture this. You're walking along the road and you see a donkey collapsed down on the ground with a big old load on its back, and he just is not moving. Adonai said to the Israelites, don't just keep on walking by on the other side. This is almost like a mirror of the parable of the Good Samaritan when you think about it here. Don't leave the donkey. Don't leave the Samaritan. Don't leave the donkey laying there helpless. He says, go to him and remove some of the burden from him. Help the donkey. But you're really not helping just the donkey. You're helping the owner of the donkey. Now that owner could be right there, as you can picture this whole scene. He might be right there, or it might be a servant, maybe operating on behalf of the owner of the donkey. We don't know. But either way, what would you do? You would have to pick up some of the goods. Pick up enough to take some of the burden off the donkey so he can get back on his feet and he can go on his way. Well, one way or another, the owner is going to know this. He is going to know that you've had some issues between the two of you, but you're now coming to his aid by way of helping the donkey. And there's probably no greater way of healing a broken relationship than coming to the aid of someone where you have a disagreement. It's an amazing kind of thing. To put it in modern vernacular, it will blow people away. You know, you can just picture the whole scene. Why are you doing this? Notice there is no instruction here regarding coming to the aid of someone you like. You don't need a law for that. We do that all the time. But Adonai was saying that there is a higher way. We are called to bear everyone's burdens regardless of our feelings for them. And Yeshua taught that very thing, and Paul did the same thing right here in his letter to the Galatians. We must bear the burdens of other people because it is the right thing to do, and Yeshua expects us to do it just as it has always been the case since Mount Sinai. The Greek word translated as burden here in Galatians 6:2 is baros. It literally means weight. It is the root for the word barometer, which measures atmospheric pressure, or more precisely, the amount of air that is in a given volume. So that's what this word is about. It's a big weight. That's what baros means. We see this reflected in the way that this word is used in 2 Corinthians 4, 17 and 18, and I'll read this to you. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So in this sense, what Paul is writing there to the Corinthians is that there is a good kind of weight when it comes to God's glory. His glory, the heaviness of God is a good thing when that comes upon us. Because when there's a lot of it, it's significant. That's the thinking there. And so now, you get into Galatians 6:2, Paul turns that around and uses it in a negative sense. A weight that we feel from the circumstances of life. So when we consider the burdens that we need to bear, it has to do with removing the weight from someone else. Now, I've got a little story that illustrates that, and I have a little keepsake that tells about this story here. Back in 1981, so this was a while ago, Don and I were in Israel. I was 26, she was 25. Our mission back in those days used to do tours to Israel, and so we were traveling around, and in 1981, this was the first year that the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem had their Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles celebration. We went to the very first one of those. Quite an elaborate affair, great events going on, a parade through the city of Jerusalem in support of the Jewish people, and it's a really great event. And so we were there for that. Of course, we're traveling around the country, and on the actual day before Sukkot begins, we went to Masada. And so we had a tour bus, and we drove on down there, and our group got in the tram and went up to the top, and we toured around, and then we went to get back on the tram, and we realized the tram was shut down because it was late in the afternoon, and they were shutting down for Sukkot. And we were all there on the top of this mountain, and the only way down was to walk. Now, the complication in this was we were all scheduled to go to a fabulous dinner at Qumran, which is down the road just a little ways there. The problem is getting there. But we had an even bigger problem. We had someone in our group whose knees were shot, and she could not make it down. So we talked among ourselves, and we decided that the group should go ahead and to try to make it to the dinner as quickly as they could. But we needed a volunteer to carry down this woman. And so we looked around, and lo and behold, there were no other 26-year-olds that were there except for me. And so I carried her down from the top of Masada. And if you've ever gone down that snake path, it's a tricky, kind of windy, rocky path, and hard on knees, even if you've got good knees. But now, mind you, I mean, I wasn't all that virtuous. This wasn't like Dudley Do-Right saying, "I'll save you, Nell," you know, as she's laying on the tracks. It was me, and that was it. So the bus took the rest of the group over to Qumran, and then turned around and then came back to pick up me and this other woman, and then took us to Qumran, and by then the show was over. They had a wonderful evening of entertainment and food, and they had a dish for everybody that was there that told you about what it is that they were serving, and so they've got salads from Dan to Beersheba, stuffed desert fowl. They had wheat boas, whatever that is, nomad bread, fruits of Canaan. So it was a beautiful little keepsake that I've kept for all these years. So they had this great event. It's like getting the T-shirt, right? I got the plate. That has been a strong reminder to me in a real practical way what it means to bear someone else's burden. I was the donkey. I was the beast of burden. And you know what? It was okay. It was okay. Because I've been on the receiving end. I've been the one where people have borne my burden. One does not live by faith for 37 years in ministry without a whole host of people coming alongside you and supporting you, as people have done for Don and I all these many years. I've been greatly encouraged by the good people who rally around our congregation here and do all the many tasks that go into making this place of worship a success in God's eyes. Over the years, we've been blessed by so many people that have helped out with our Passover Seders, coming a few days ahead of time to do the cooking, and groups of people that come and help set up and serve and clean up afterwards. I love to hear reports when you yourself come to the aid of someone else inside our congregation, or maybe someone outside of the congregation when there is a need. It's a great encouragement to me. Prayer, of course, is one of those great ways of bearing other people's burdens. It was humbling for me to know, 14 years ago now almost, when I had friends that I knew and people that I never met who were praying for me when I had cancer. Another way of bearing burdens is when we take the time to listen to people and to encourage them. That is huge. We're so busy. It's so easy to say, you know, really, I don't have time. And sometimes that is true. But we need to make time to listen to people. There is nothing more discouraging when you open up to someone and you can tell that they're just not listening, which tells me that they really don't care. They don't want to be bothered by your problems. And they try to wiggle out as quickly as they can. But when you use your ears, you are exercising as much spiritual strength as using your arms and your legs. But what if we go to the other extreme? Instead of simply listening and trying to be an encouragement, we can hear just those things that we want to hear, and then we go right into that mode of trying to fix it for somebody else, to tell them just exactly what they ought to be doing. Family dynamic is really common with that particular one. And so we will continue to get on their case about fixing a particular problem that they might have. One of the ways that we do that is making people feel guilty, so that they'll feel motivated to change their ways. But when you make someone feel guilty, you become the burden. Because that person who is made to feel guilty, they might say something that will try to appease you, but ultimately that person will disrespect you. They will avoid you, and who knows where it will lead, because you have become the burden in their lives. But all of these ways of bearing one another's burdens are incomplete if we limit it to those that we love, or to those that believe as we do, because we do have enemies and those who hate us. And while they may not have an overloaded donkey, they do have burdens. And both Moses and Yeshua have not exempted us from bearing their burdens. Well, we can pray for them. Because what you're doing is you're setting aside your needs, your burdens, and taking on the needs and burdens of others. So our prayers must include the burdens that are being experienced by those that we might consider to be our enemies. In Psalm 35, David describes what he did while he was being pursued by his enemies. He says this, "But as for me, when they," his enemies, "were sick, my clothing was sackcloth." That means he was mourning. "I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer kept returning to my bosom." So that's a way of saying he kept doing it over and over again. "I went about it as though it were my friend or my brother. I bowed down mourning as one who sorrows for a mother." That's an amazing thing, that David was praying for those who were persecuting him and pursuing him, just like he would treat his own family. Well, we should be doing the same. It might be praying for their salvation, or for the Ruach Adonai, the Spirit of God, to hold back the evil that has captured their hearts. When our thoughts turn to the rampage of the Islamic State, do we just complain about how awful they are? Or maybe just pray for God's hand of mercy to protect the innocent? Or do we also pray for the true and living God to be revealed to the militants and for demonic strongholds to be broken? That's bearing their burdens, because they are burdened by this great evil that has come upon them. Surely those militants dressed in black are burdened by the darkness of sin that only Adonai can remove. So we should pray for them, and that is bearing their burden. When we do all of these things, then and only then are we fulfilling the Torah of Messiah. We are living it out in its fullest godly way. Now, there is another reason why it is good for us to bear the burdens of others. Now, here's one of those little corollary Bible lessons. Anytime you see the word for, F-O-R, whether it be the Hebrew word ki, K-I, or the Greek word gar, G-A-R, it means basically the same thing. It means it's a turning point. And it's going to give you the reason why you should do what was stated just prior to that. So, if you think more in terms of the word because, all right? Galatians 6:3, the very next verse for bearing one another's burdens and thus fulfilling the Torah of Messiah, says, for, meaning the reason why you bear those burdens, is if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. You see, bearing a burden is a humbling thing to do. It is easy to think of a particular situation as being beneath you. You can be so successful in a situation. You can reach a position of prestige. And then you begin to think of yourself as being above all that. Or maybe you just rationalize, it's just not my problem, it's someone else's problem. But that's not the model we have in Yeshua. Philippians 2:8 says, in spite of the lofty status of Yeshua, Philippians 2:8 says, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And so I am convinced that it is very good to emulate Yeshua. So just as he bore our sins, we can bear the burdens of others. And it is all about looking upon yourself. The reason why you should be motivated to bear the burden of someone else is you realize how destitute you are personally without God. There is only one burden that we can bear on our own. Paul is getting to that point here in Galatians. Paul first introduces the need by calling us to turn our gaze away from other people and to look inward. Verse 4, that each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone and not in regard to another. All right, Greek again. So we got the word dokimazo, translated as examine, or I believe in the King James Version it says prove yourself. This word is used elsewhere by Paul in 2 Corinthians 13:5, that says, test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves. Or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Messiah Yeshua is in you, unless you indeed fail the test? And so that's consistent with what Paul is saying here in Galatians 6:5. He says, each one must examine his own work. Then you go to verse 5. For the reason why we are to examine ourselves is because each one will bear his own load or burden, depending on your translation. Now, this is one of those passages that at first glance doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Bear one another's burdens, for each one shall bear his own burden. Bringing it all together. Huh? But you see, the burdens here, they're different. They're different words. Even though they might be translated into English in the exact same way. So if your version says in verse 2 and verse 5 the word burden, they're not the same word. They're different Greek words. Unlike baros, the word that is translated as burden in verse 2, meaning weight, here in verse 5, the word fortion is used. This word does not mean weight, it means freight. It doesn't mean weight, it means freight. I can get a little jingle going here. As in the cargo on a ship that is being transported at a cost. Another way of thinking of this is a bill of freight. Or an invoice. That's the way that we should be thinking of this word translated as burden or load in Galatians 6:5. So if you stay then with this figure of speech, your life is like a ship that is on a journey. And everything about you, your heart, your soul, your mind, is now stored in the cargo hold of that ship. And you are trying to get to a destination, heaven or eternity, if you will. And there is a cost that has to be paid for that cargo to be unloaded at its destination. So there will be someone that will be there and will look for the invoice to see whether it's been paid, and then we'll say, yep, okay, go ahead, unload the cargo. But if it's not been paid, you have a problem. They will take the cargo. It's theirs because it hasn't been paid. They transported it so they can sell it on their own. And so what Paul is saying here is that each one of us need to examine ourselves to see to it that the invoice has been paid. And you alone are the one who is responsible to see to it that it gets done. That's what it means, that each one shall bear his own burden. Because that burden is the invoice of salvation. So that is all well and good if you have the money to pay the cost. But if you can't make full payment, you have a problem. And so that precisely describes our situation when it comes to our salvation. None of us are able to pay the cost on our own. No amount of keeping Torah or any other religious act is sufficient. But the good news is that Yeshua paid the price for us. In fact, Yeshua used the very same word, phortion, in the verbal form of that word, when he gave this invitation in Matthew 11:28. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest, he says. That kind of a burden, but it's the burden of your salvation. So when we come to Yeshua with humble hearts and with repentance and believe in him that he paid the price for us, he died on our behalf. The price of our freight is paid in full. Our burden is paid in full. And so we are then entitled to enter into the destination, our place in eternity. It's a beautiful word picture. The key to understanding Galatians 6:5 is that while the price can be paid by Yeshua for our salvation, we are the ones who bear the responsibility to make sure that the price applies to us. Nobody else can do that for you. It's not a burden that somebody else can bear, like we have in verse 2. We have to believe it by faith. The responsibility is ours alone. So that very clear principle of Scripture informs us in a lot of ways. What it does, it should help us to understand that religious principle or practices, like infant baptism, for example, have no place in God's economy. Because you must bear the burden alone for your salvation. No one can bear your burden to that point of salvation as the water is sprinkled upon you. One last thought brings this all full circle. Remember I was talking about the Torah of Messiah at the very beginning? Remember what Yeshua said, come to me all ye who are heavy laden and I will give you rest? He goes on to say this in Matthew 11:29 through 30. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my fortion, my burden, is light. This word yoke in the biblical culture has a very specific meaning. It was used to describe the particular interpretation of Torah held by a rabbi. It's not about oxen, it's about rabbinic interpretation. Rabbis had their own yoke. Talmudim, or disciples, were yoked to a rabbi with authority. They were tethered to him. They were tied to him and not free to wander off to the teachings of another one with authority. But, you see, that is a very good thing because he makes it easy for us to understand if we will just listen to what he has to say. And the burden of his teaching is light because he does not overload us with complicated religious obligations. He is telling us that we have the ability to follow his teachings. You have the ability to follow the teachings of Yeshua. You can do it. Because the Spirit of God is upon you, and Yeshua will make you able to follow and to do as he is taught. The same is true for Yeshua's disciples who wrote the Brit Hadashah, including Paul's exhortation to bear one another's burdens. You can do it because Yeshua paid the biggest cost of all, and through the empowerment of the Spirit of God, we can live out the rest. So what is your burden? Is it something that someone here can help you out with? Now, if it's a logistical kind of a thing, by all means, let us know, and we'll see how we can help you. Is it a spiritual need? We have elders here who are willing to pray for you. Or is it the kind of burden that is related to a relationship with Yeshua? This is something that you have to take care of yourself. This day is the perfect day to take care of that matter. If you feel like, I don't even really know how to do that, talk to these same elders. Talk to me. We will help you. Because I want each and every one of you to make sure that the price of your freight has been paid. I want you to get to the destination that is the same as so many gathered here. It's a blessed place. But you got to make sure that the price is paid. And I want to make sure that you know for certain that that has happened.